Thanks for downloading this podcast from Radio Kerry. For more, go to radiokerry.ie/podcasts or search iTunes using the keyword Radio Kerry.
AgriTime on Radio Kerry with Aisling O'Brien. Brought to you in association with Kerry Group.
Good evening, and you're very welcome along to this week's Agri Time. Aisling O'Brien here with you as usual, right up until 8 o'clock. And we've plenty coming up between this and then, including looking ahead to the breeding season and getting your cattle in the best shape possible. Prices from marts and factories with Tomás Burke. We touch base with the Kerry Social Farming Project, and In Search of Farm Trees. We'll tell you all about that a little bit later on. If you want to contact the show, you can do so in a number of ways as usual. You can text or WhatsApp us on 083 300 3300. You can drop an email to agritime@radiokerry.ie or tweet us at agritimeork. Now to meet our first guest on the show this evening. I'm delighted to be joined on the line by Joseph McCrohan, who is Rural Development Officer and RSS and TUS Manager with South Kerry Development Partnership. Joseph, you're very welcome to AgriTime.
Thank you, Aisling.
Now, Joseph, we wanted to have a chat with you in relation to two things. Both are quite positive, actually, because we firstly, in relation to Farm Assist, there's been an increase in the payment, and that all came from last year's budget. But with all of the positive things, normally it takes a couple of months to come through, but it has come through very recently.
Yeah, well, it's about €5 of an increase. The rate from in 2017 was 193, and then the qualifying adult payment has gone from 128 up to 131. They haven't gone up for a while, so it's welcome at this stage, because obviously the cost of living is continually going up, you know.
And are we seeing an increase in people who are looking to access Farm Assist payments?
Yeah, we are. It's farmers realise how bad things are, really, in the sense of the weather has proved havoc, really, for farmers and farm incomes over the last 6 months with cattle and cows inside for a long, long period, costing a lot of money. Farmers are again under pressure there, and we get a steady flow of farmers coming to us all the time looking to see if they're entitled to Farm Assist. And our record of around 20 years of this now, and 90% of the farmers that come to us qualify for the payment, you know.
90%?
Yeah, we'd say up around that, you know. We'd be fairly sure, you know, before anyone goes for assessment whether they qualify or not, you know. It's the question is to get enough farmers coming forward. But they are, you know, slowly but surely they do come forward. There are supports there by the government for people in all walks of life, and people should avail of those supports to make it easier for people to live and just and raise their families. In certain parts of the county, farming is very difficult, and they have made the transition maybe 20 years ago. But when we go into more, we'll say the more traditional, where the farming land was better, those are the farmers now that are tending to apply for Farm Assist and apply to go on to the Rural Social Scheme.
So I suppose farmers on the more, let's say, marginal or disadvantaged lands would have been your traditional people that you would see, but now people with maybe the better quality land, they're coming forward as well now.
Absolutely, very much so. That's the shift now. The people on the very marginal land have all made the transition maybe 15, 20 years ago, and now we see the people on, we'll say, what we call the better farming land, whether it be milking cows and that type of thing. They're the ones now that are coming forward for support and looking down, looking at their options as to whether they're going to try to farm their way out of problems, or are they going to look for off-farm work that will complement their farming business.
And you were saying, look, nine out of 10 farmers who come into you, you know, trying to see if they would qualify. What would qualify farmers for this, or is it very much dependent on what they farm at?
Yeah, well, it's all based on income, and everyone's situation is different, and it depends on their family situation and how many people they can claim for. So every case is different, and we have to go case by case by case to prove to see whether they qualify or not. And by and large, in Kerry, very few farmers, their farm income will put them over the limit, okay, because the farm profits just aren't there, you know. So the only things that really tend to put farmers over the limit is if they have an awful lot of money in the bank accounts, or if their partners have reasonably good off-farm work, full-time off-farm work, or if they have a second property, or if they have shares, very valuable shares. And I suppose for single farmers that are living maybe alone, that there are a lot of costs when you're trying to borrow all the costs of a household just on the farming. It can be a lot, and can be very hard to stretch to cover all the costs, because there are a lot of bills now, you know, that households have that they didn't have in the past. If you get on the farm assistance and transfer onto either community employment or the rural resource scheme, you hold on to all your secondary benefits for a period of time while you're on those schemes. So, you know, we have South Kerry Partnership and our sister organisation, North Kerry, we employ a lot of farmers, and they're fantastic workers that contribute immensely to the community. And it's better all around for everybody in Kerry that people are engaged in these activities and making use of this money that is there from central government to be used in Kerry and spent in Kerry.
Yeah, and talk to us about the rural social scheme, because we've seen some extra places coming on stream as well, another positive.
Yeah, well, here in South Kerry, we've got 8 extra places for the rural social scheme. So we're looking for farmers to come and have a chat with us and see if they'll be interested in coming out on the schemes. They're guaranteed an income on from the scheme of at least 10,000 a year. They get paid for their holidays, and they get their credits paid towards their pensions, which is very, very important for farmers, for everybody. And they get out to work alongside other farmers, and we try to make it as best we can farmer-friendly and family-friendly. So we get a lot of farmers, why isn't that coming out as well? Because when children start going to secondary school, they have some spare time maybe, or primary school, they have some spare time, and they can work maybe from 10 to 2 or whatever suits them. And we try to be as flexible as we possibly can. But the basis of the scheme is that they do 19 and a half hours a week, and they get a weekly payment for that. We have a lot of office-based work, because a lot of community group organisations now have to do a lot of paperwork. So we help them out with that, and that would be office-based type work. Then we do some caring work in creches and in caring for the elderly. And then the general teams out on the ground would be working on sports fields and on community centres, graveyards, walkways and so on and so forth, that type of projects. Like, we have very, very few farmers ever left the rural resource scheme in South Kerry Partnership. The vast, vast majority of them are absolutely delighted to be on it and engaged with it and stay on it. And we have well over 200 farmers now have worked on that scheme. We have about 12 places available now.
Joseph, if people, you know, in South Kerry, and I'm sure in North Kerry, they can access North, East and West Kerry development as well. But if they're in the south of the county, can they contact you if they think that they might be, you know, eligible for either the scheme or the payment?
Yeah, they can, absolutely. We have offices in Killarney, Kinmare, Castleveen, Cloughlin. And there would be staff within those offices, supervisors, and they'll be able to advise the farmers on their situation. They can contact myself as well at 087-284-9165. There are farmers in every pocket of Kerry that could avail of these schemes, and they really should consider those.
Excellent. Well, that's great. Joseph McCrohan, Rural Development Officer and RSS and TUS Manager with South Kerry Development Partnership. Thanks so much for joining us on the show.
Thank you.
Now, before we take the break, last Sunday saw competitive action return to Beaufort under the supervision of Kerry Ploughing Association for the first time since the 1960s. And here are the results from the day, courtesy of PRO of the Kerry Ploughing Association. Of course, that's Tom O'Mahony. In the two furrow vintage class, Aeneas Horan on 162 marks. The ladies class went to Martina Flynn on 101 marks. The horse class went to Moss Trant on 130 marks. The under 21 class to Shane Godley on 81 marks. The novice class to Tony Wharton on 70 marks. And Donal Tidings took the Loy Digging class on 116 marks. Now it's time for a very quick break, after which we're going to be catching up with the Kerry Social Farming Project.
AgriTime on Radio Kerry with Aisling O'Brien. Brought to you in association with Kerry Group. AgriTime on Radio Kerry. Covering farming issues in the kingdom.
And you're very welcome back to the show. Now, my next guest is a regular contributor to the Farming Independent. Anne Fitzgerald is looking for your help with a new project. I caught up with her a little bit earlier on to hear all about it.
I'm from Arda, proud West Limerick woman, and living in Laois now. I'm married to a suckler farmer in Laois, in Ballacolla, County Laois, home of the ploughing many times.
You're no stranger to Kerry as well.
Myself and my sister and our kids, we usually go to Kerry every summer for a fortnight. For many years, we've been to Carrigdaniel, and this past summer now, we were in Dingle. Beautiful part of the country, we love it. Every opportunity, we go to Kerry.
You mentioned your husband is a suckler farmer there. Obviously, it's an industry and a part of the industry that's under a lot of pressure at the moment and is really under the microscope. How are you finding things in Laois?
People aren't really thinking about the big picture, I think, perhaps at the moment. It's mostly the small picture of trying to get through the hard winter and into the spring and get stock out. I mean, it's just been very difficult. Obviously, suckler farming is under the microscope. From an Irish point of view, and particularly from, I suppose, a social point of view, I mean, my greatest wish is that suckler farming does survive, because I just think that it is such an important, integral part of the fabric of our society, of our communities. To me, keeping people on the land, it keeps the land alive, keeps the countryside alive.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the reason that we have you on is your column from this week's Farming Independent really caught my eye, because not only do you speak about our beloved John B. Keane in it, but you're also fascinated by trees. But firstly, we might go back to John B. because he featured a little bit in your childhood, and I suppose you were kind of maybe not so taken by him initially when you came across him, and I suppose his musings on perhaps the less remarkable things in life.
I went to school in Stella Maris and Foynes, and I can remember coming home at the weekends and that the Limerick Leader would be there in front of us, and it's a broadsheet paper, and I can remember looking through it, and you come to the front page of the second section, and it was almost entirely taken up with John B's musings. And I can remember thinking, what in the name of God is he writing about? Because every week it was about something really, really small, like the smallest of things. And I, in my innocence, my arrogant innocence, I sort of thought, why is he not writing about the big things in life? Why is he not writing about wars and politics and stuff like that? And it is only through the passage of life that I've learned that life isn't lived in big moments. Life is lived through little things. And John B. was the absolute master at doing that. Is finding, I think, if it was the head of a needle, that he would be able to write in such colour and flavour and such fullness and richness. He was the man to do that.
You write in the Farming Independent, but you wandered into the literary world yourself as well.
5 years ago, between myself and my husband, mostly I did the work and he gets the credit. We did a book about, it was called A Year on Our Farm, recorded a year of events on the farm in words and photos. And the idea was to show life as it is, you know, warts and all, you know, where you have livestock, you have dead stock. We also wove into it the stories of the people who would work or contribute to their services to the farm.
Obviously, when people get a book over the line, it's like anything in life. People are asking you, what's your next step?
You know, for quite a while, I've been trying to think, well, you know, what really interests me? What do I really like? I suppose thought about big things, and I kind of think there are so many people who are so much more articulate, I feel, about big things. So I was trying to think, well, maybe I could have an in into doing something small. So, or smaller anyway. And so the thing that struck me was that one of the things that I've loved certainly for a very long time are trees. And I mean, obviously I love the big, you know, the specimen monumental trees. I mean, they're fabulous and they're everything. They're lovely to look at and that kind of thing. But I just think that there is, I hope, because I think that there is an untold story of farm trees, of the trees we look at that are in all of our lives across the countryside, you know, down the fields that nobody else gets to see, the trees that are shaped by nature in all its formats. And I think that in many cases that there are, that we have a connection with these. You know, I mean, there have been many of them are going to be there for a lot longer than we have been or ever going to be. And I'm hoping that it will resonate with people, that it's, you know, it's a connection to a very small part of people's lives, but very important.
Absolutely, because I know myself, I share your love of trees, and when I bought my own house, the first thing I was really, you know, keen to do was plant a couple of trees, and I've three of them in the garden now, and they're very, very young yet, but you know, I often think that they'll long outlive me, hopefully, and you know, they'll go on to the next generation. And no different with these farm trees, you know, they would have been there, you know, often through a couple of generations.
Yes, certainly. I mean, many of them, they will be down maybe hundreds of years, and maybe not that long. Or, I mean, the kind of things I'm hoping is that, you know, perhaps something that has been shaped by nature. Like, for example, last year when we were down in Dingle, we were walking down near the Ryan's daughter house. What struck me was along by the cliff, you know, some of the trees that are being shaped by the winds and things like that. I suppose my thinking on this is that, you know, we as humans, we think that we can create lovely things, and we can. Mankind can produce lovely things. But I think that it can never surpass what nature can create all by its own.
And a lot of these trees would have names as well, you know, as they're such an integral part of people's land and their farms.
That's right. I mean, people will have used them as landmarks and in measuring distances and going back over again many generations and things like that. And I know myself that, you know, sometimes when these trees fall, that there can actually be a sense of grief, you know, because these have been there for just so long. And so many, how many thousands of people have passed by them? And in a sense, because, I mean, trees are alive, what have they overseen? You know, what have these, you know, if they could talk, what stories could they tell?
You want to tell the story of the notable trees, and maybe trees that people pass every single day on the farm when they're working, and, you know, they mightn't pay much attention to, but you're looking for them to get in contact with you because you're willing to travel the length and breadth of the country. And as you said, you saw some interesting trees down here shaped by the Atlantic Sea and the wind and the squalls that come in and hit the west coast of Kerry. So you're looking for everybody to have a look around and get in touch with you if they feel that they have something to offer.
Yes, I'd be delighted. The only way I can get to them is if people come to me. But my phone number is 087-2207-327. My email is quite simple. It's afitzgerald@independent.ie.
Well, best of luck with it, Anne. We look forward to seeing what you come up with. And maybe when the book comes out, we'll have a chat with you about, I suppose, all the stories that you're going to have from around the country and, you know, all the interesting tales that these trees have to tell us.
It'd be my pleasure. Thank you, Aisling.
Now, last year, I had the immense pleasure of meeting all of those involved in the wonderful Kerry Social Farming Project, which gives adults with disabilities the chance to spend time on farms every week. It's supported by the South Kerry Development Partnership, North East and West Kerry Development, the HSC and service providers, Kerry County Council and many more. The project began in the south of the county and is now spreading countywide, and new host farmers are being sought all the time. Last week, I travelled to Lissanore in Castle Island to the O'Mahony Farm, which hosted the first open day in North Kerry for Kerry Social Farming. And first up, I spoke with host farmer Helen O'Mahony.
Well, we're here today to do awareness for the social farming. And we have a boy from Knocknagoshal. His name is Michael Crimmins, and he's coming since last July. He comes on a Thursday. There's lots of other host farmers around the county, and we're hoping to get more. We have a new host farmer from Ballybunnan and a new host farmer from Listowel here today.
Because we were in George Kelly's farm in Beaufort, and it was a lovely day out, and I think there was huge positivity when the minister came down. And I suppose this is kind of building on that, and we're trying to drive the project on. And, you know, are farmers sometimes a bit wary of getting involved in this project?
Yes, Aisling. We had a great day at George's farm with Minister Creed, and we hope he will drive it ahead. We need to get funding on a long-term basis, not just on an annual basis, because it's not easy to plan with just 1 year ahead of you. You would be wary of getting involved, because first of all, the responsibility of having somebody that has an intellectual disability of some form or other, or a physical disability. But, you know, they guide you along, and there's so many farmers doing it now. There's great support. And people that would be a little bit apprehensive about it, come and meet us, come and spend a day with us when we have somebody here, or come to our gatherings like this.
Yeah. And what's your experience been, Helen, of this?
My experience is that Michael comes on a Thursday. We look forward to him. Patrick and Danny sometimes are here, and sometimes they're going off working with the machines. But we do our jobs. We don't have a routine as such, but we're planning, and we might get a routine job. But he's very good. Very good. I mean, he does the cows with me and we do our jobs. We clean out the sheds. The other day he cleaned out the Jeep for Padraig, and then we have our dinner, and then we went out for lunch one day when we had a free day, of course, and all the rest.
Yeah.
And he loves my grandchild. He takes her for a walk, and we plan to do some walks and maybe go to the beach in the summer for a day off as well.
Yeah, and look, I mean, it's fantastic, you know, because I mean, we spoke to the participants, you know, the last time we were involved with the social farming project, and people love coming to the farm. They love the interaction with the animals, with the farmers, and then, as you say, going out for lunches, going to the beach, and there's a real social outlet here.
All real social outlet, and it's not all about work, you know. And I mean, we've, you know, there's a group of us together now. I mean, we would be great friends, all the host farmers, and we meet at different occasions, and we'll just have to drive it further and make it more aware and make it more welcoming for the participants, and that people aren't afraid to have them for a day, and to also understand that if you have them, I have Michael on a Thursday, and then one Thursday lately I was going out with two of my friends, so it was no problem to cancel that day.
So there's flexibility within it?
Oh, there's 100% flexibility. Yes, 100% flexibility, and that's the important part of it.
Michael, you come to Helen's farm.
It's out the shed, I paint and watch the paws.
And are you good at painting?
Good enough, like. Yeah.
You're probably better than me, I'd say.
I know.
And what else do you do on the farm?
Yes, size the cows, and nuts,
They're happy to see you coming with a bit of food.
Yeah.
And do you like the working with the cows?
I do. I like it.
Working with Helen, is that good?
That's good,
There's an all time for a cup of tea and a chat as well.
Cup of tea and a chat, and so on. And my dinner,
Coordinator of Kerry Social Farming Project, Irene Kavanagh.
It's fantastic to have our first open day host farm walk in North Kerry. It started off in South Kerry with just four farms, and now we have 17 farms on board in South and North Kerry. The collaboration between NEKD and SKDP has been very important in getting the farms up and running in North Kerry as well.
And you mentioned there in your speech that there's four new farms in the North Kerry area. You're obviously looking to grow that now.
Absolutely. Any interested farmers, I go and visit them on the farm and we have a bit of a chat about what's involved. As Helen said, you know, it's really worth to have a try at it. We have kind of a trial period at the beginning for where, you know, the participant kind of susses it out and the farmer susses it out. And in Helen's case now, I was there when Michael came for the first day, and himself and Helen, as it turns out, both come from Knockmagashel. They knew my uncle, who was parish priest there, and there was a big chat about who was who in Knockmagashel, and I kind of knew that this was going to work. They hit it off so well, so I'm kind of like a matchmaker.
But I suppose, look, Helen did touch on it there. You know, farmers are listening to this, Irene, and they might be kind of worried about red tape or any issues like that. You're there to support them through that too.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think one of the things in my role is to support the farmer. I kind of do the paperwork part of it, so I kind of sit down with the farmer and just kind of fill it out, so that, you know, the Garda vetting, it's a legal requirement now, I suppose, in any community voluntary project.
I think farmers have enough paperwork nowadays.
Oh God, we all have enough paperwork. It's that's one thing. It's very important to keep the bureaucracy off the farm, and it's about farming, it's about social inclusion. It really brings back the spirit of the Mehill as well, because in our farm walks and in setting up for open days like this, it's all hands on deck, and it really brings, and even in the farm upgrades, we kind of look at the farm to see if we can make it safer for a person with disability, and all that is fully funded by the Department of Agriculture, because it's the farmer volunteers their time, but we make sure that no farmer is out of pocket. And so when we do the farm upgrades, often other farmers that are involved in the project come and help the new farm to get set up. So, you know, so it's a great social inclusion for farmers as well.
You were saying there's loads of participants, so there's obviously more participants now at the moment than host farmers, so the call is really going out for people if they are interested to contact you.
Oh, absolutely. I think at the moment I've nearly over 30 participants on the waiting list, and it's growing. So definitely, you know, if anyone is interested and wants to find out more, we'd love to hear from you right across the county.
And I suppose the project, finally, Irene, it just encompasses, I suppose, a more inclusive society, a better society.
Oh, absolutely. And the beauty about this project is that these aren't specialised farms in the sense of special disability farms. These are ordinary farms in the community. And when the participant comes, the farming doesn't stop. If there's calving, there's calving. If there's livestock to be fed or dosed or whatever, it's brilliant to see participants doing that with the support of the farmer. Some people who have maybe a higher need will also have a support worker from a service provider with them as well, because we want to make sure that we can provide social farming for people of all abilities. And you know, the participants get to know the neighbours. Farmers going to the mart, they come to the mart as well, or to the agri store, whatever, you know. So it's being out and about in, it's, you know, normalisation, rather than in, we're moving away from the kind of the institutional type setting that used to be there.
Coming up after this quick break, Tomás Burke will be here to bring us prices and to discuss the ongoing fodder issues here in Kerry and beyond.
AgriTime on Radio Kerry with Aisling O'Brien. Brought to you in association with Kerry Group. For farming matters in the kingdom, don't miss AgriTime every Thursday at 7 p.m. on Radio Kerry.
And you're very welcome back to the show. Now we're joined on the line by, I suppose, a relieved Mayo man, IFA Livestock Officer Tomás Burke. You're very welcome back to AgriTime.
Thanks very much, Aisling, and very much relieved and very grateful to our own clubman, Kevin McLaughlin, for kicking the point with his weaker foot.
Mm-hmm. And I suppose on tinderhooks, it was right up to the very dying minute in that game.
Oh, it was. It was. But we seem to be the masters of escape until it comes to the crunch day. But hopefully it might ignite something for the championship. But still, we're not getting too carried away this year just yet, Aisling.
Yeah, I was going to say, lessons learned from the league campaign now going into the championship, do you think?
Well, you would have liked to have thought so, but I suppose the disappointment in Mayo is that there wasn't that many new players tried out or blooded in it. And I suppose it's disappointing that using a lot of the established players that we performed so poorly in the league, had we been in this situation, having looked at 6, 7 or 8 new players and tried them out, you would maybe have said it was a worthwhile league. So a lot of concern and trepidation facing into Galway next May at this stage in the county.
I suppose coming back to farming matters, Tomás, a lot of pressure coming on Michael Creed now out there in relation to fodder and fodder stocks. It's starting to pinch down here in Kerry, and no doubt obviously more keenly around in other areas of the country as well.
Without a doubt, Aisling, and very disappointing to date the reaction from the Minister in relation to it. I suppose we had our first insight into this in relation to the crisis that started in the West and in the Northwest late last year, and the poor enough reaction from the Minister and his officials in that scenario. We're obviously heading into something entirely different at this stage, which is the real concern, because normally in the West and in the Northwest of the country, fodder supplies for this time of year would be sourced in the South or Southeast. But now we're having a situation where farmers in those areas and in the higher or the more densely cattle populated areas where there are bigger numbers of cattle are facing into huge potential fodder shortages if there isn't a significant and fast turnaround in the weather. But it doesn't look like it's going to be feasible at this stage. So a real, real crisis looming throughout the country at this stage, Aisling, and very worrying at the very slow reaction of the Minister to it.
Yeah, I mean, the fodder scheme, has it cut it at all?
Well, absolutely not. And if you look at what the intention of that was, Aisling, that was to move surplus fodder within the country to the regions which were identified primarily in the West and in the Northwest prior to Christmas. But the reality of it is now those areas that were claimed by the Minister and officials to have a surplus fodder are now the areas that are looking into a real difficult situation over the coming weeks. Because historically, in the better land areas, cattle would be at grass at this stage. In the West or in the Northwest in particular, you would still be budgeting for another couple of weeks and maybe not hitting as hard in that regard. But that extra bit of fodder for these few weeks would more often than not have been sourced in the areas that are now facing into the shortage themselves.
Okay, look, any positives to be found ahead of the Easter weekend in the markets?
Well, I suppose there is the positive lights are coming from the markets, thankfully, and farmers have been able to move off cattle that are particularly badly caught. But in the cattle factories, demand has been firm for the week, prices continuing to edge upwards. Last week, kill of 32,764 head considering the short week, a very good indication of the strong market demand that's out there and how anxious factories are for cattle. In Britain, our main market prices also edged upwards over the past week or so to the equivalent of $4.45 a kilo, including VAT, for our grades. Now, while some factories continue to quote $3.95 for bullocks, Aisling, in reality, the base price for the majority of them has moved to €4 a kilo this week, with some sellers at the top end of the market also securing a further 5 cents a kilo, bringing the base price up to €4.05 a kilo. Heifer prices in the main are €4.10 a kilo as a base, despite a small number of factories quoting 5 cents a kilo less, and indeed similar to the bullocks, sellers at the top end of the market being able to secure €4.15 a kilo as a base price, which wasn't as available last week, an indication of how the trade has continued to strengthen. Young bull prices will be similar to the past week or so, ranging from €3.80 to €4.20 a kilo for OZRs and ewes, but mainly selling between €3.90 and €4.10 a kilo. The cow trade is strong, prices running probably 20 to 30 cents a kilo above last year's levels. As usual, there's a significant gap between prices paid in specialist factories and some others, extending to over 20 cents a kilo in some cases. It's important to shop around. Keep in mind the local market option as well, Aisling, for farmers, particularly those selling smaller numbers, where prices available there are compared in favourably with what can be secured from some factories, particularly if farmers aren't able to negotiate that extra 10 to 15 cents a kilo. P-grade in cows range from 330 to 340, O-grade's 340 to 355, R-grade's 355 to 370, and U-grade's pushing all the way up to 380 a kilo. In the cattle marts, strongest performers continue to be the forward store bullocks and heifers. Numbers and offer are low and obviously demand very strong. Good quality, lighter stores are a steady trade, with lesser quality lots finding the going a little bit more difficult, not helped obviously by delayed demand from grass buyers because of what we talked about earlier. Good quality weanings are a steady trade, but again, plainer quality lots have come under some pressure over the past week. Number of calves coming out is easing. Prices for the export type Friesian bull calves would have strengthened as a result by an average of €3 to €5 a head on last week. Beef bred calves, though, are making up a bigger percentage of the calf sales, as would be normal for this time of year, but prices as a result for these would have eased a little bit over the past week or 10 days. Heavy forward store cattle ranging from 2 to 250 a kilo, lighter stores from 180 to 260 a kilo, weanlings ranging from 190 to 320 a kilo, but mainly selling 220 to 290. Export type Friesian bull calves averaging in around €80 a head, which, as we said earlier, will be €3 to €5 up on last week. Angus and Hereford calves ranging from 150 to 250 a head in the main, which will be back probably 10 to 20 euro a head in some cases. On the sheep side, Aisling, the trade has been steady this week for hoggets. Quotes similar to last week. Paid prices ranging running 10 to 20 cent a kilo above the quotes, mainly from 6 to 6.10 a kilo, with top prices of 6.20 a kilo available. The numbers of spring lambs coming out still low, but increased by over 1,500 head on the previous week to just under 2,000 lambs last week. Very few factories actively looking for lambs yet, with prices paid ranging from 7 to 7.20 a kilo, and wholesalers being the main drivers of the trade for the small numbers of spring lamb. Cull yoke prices ranging from 3 to 3.20 in the main, with some of the specialist finishers maybe getting the shade along with that. In the sheep mart, demand for hoggets and spring lamb is strong. 40 to 45 kilo lambs, 120 to 135 a head. Butchers pushing a further 10 to 20 euro a head onto that, where there's competition between them and factory agents. 50 kilo plus hoggets, 130 to 140 a head. 43 to 50 kilo hoggets, 110 to 130 a head. 35 to 40 kilo hoggets, 80 to 95 a head. Yos with singles, 120 to 200 euro. Yos with doubles, 180 to 290. Fresh cull yos from 110 all the way up to 130, and indeed over it in some cases. And lighter yos, actually, 60 to 90 euro a head.
That's great, Moss. Thanks for that. A very happy Easter to you, and we'll chat to you again next week on the show.
Thanks very much, Aisling.
Coming up after this quick break, we're going to be joined by a member of the Chagask team from here in the county.
AgriTime on Radio Kerry with Aisling O'Brien. Brought to you in association with Kerry Group. for farming matters in the kingdom. Don't miss AgriTime, every Thursday at 7pm on Radio Kerry.
And you're very welcome back to the final part of this evening's Agri Time. If you want to get in touch with us on the show, you can drop us an email. It's agritime@radiokerry.ie. Now, as always, to finish off the show, we're joined by a member of the Chagask team from here in the county. And this evening, I'm delighted to welcome to the show Claire McAuliffe from Chagask in Listowel. Claire, you're very welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, Aisling.
Now, Claire, I suppose a lot of focus at the moment trying to get cattle out to grass and all of that. And we dealt with that quite extensively last week on the show, but we're going to turn our attention to the upcoming breeding season, because I suppose it'll all kick off in about a month. Before all that happens, we want to get the cow right, and now is the time when we can do something about it and to have a look at the body condition scores of our cows right now.
Basically, farmers have a fair idea looking at them if cows are getting any bit thin or anything like that, but the best way to go around body condition scoring is to actually run your hand along the cow. So you'd be looking there, running your hand over the pin bones, over the line, and over the ribs as well. Just, I suppose, you're feeling the cover that is actually on the bones to make sure that there's a decent cover there. And I suppose, look, coming up to breeding, you're targeting a body condition score of 3 across the herd. You know, on average, you will have cows that are lower than this, and you will have cows that are higher than this as well that have a better cover on them. I suppose the main reason for looking at it now is that there's still a bit of time to intervene in any cows that are a bit low in body condition, that you'd have a chance maybe to put them on once a day milking, or maybe increase the ration where possible. As well, I suppose, being conscious that it wouldn't end up upsetting their stomach just with the amount of meal that is going in at the moment.
What are the problems, Claire, if a cow is too thin?
If she is too thin at the moment, basically she probably won't be cycling. The biggest target is to get the cow and make sure she's cycling coming up when you try to start breeding the cows there, maybe at the end of April or May. So I suppose, like that, any cow that is gone thin or is in under pressure after calving, she most likely won't be cycling. So you're going to have her coming in late when she actually does start cycling, and she mightn't start, I suppose, ovulating until maybe 2 or 3 weeks into when you've actually started breeding. So she'll be a cow that could slip late in calving next year. So I suppose that's the biggest risk with cows that would be in a bit thin now at the moment. I suppose the options there for fellas, to pick up cows that aren't ovulating at the moment. Some people, I suppose, would look at scanning the cows, or maybe some people might scan the whole herd, and then I suppose other people might just scan cows that had hard calvings or maybe kept their cleanings after calving. So I suppose just by scanning, they'll pick up anything that's wrong, or they'll see if the cow is ovulating or not. Otherwise, I suppose we'd recommend that the whole herd should be tail painted at the moment. So I suppose normally people wouldn't tail paint until they actually start AI in the end of April or May. So I suppose if they actually tail paint at the moment, it gives them an opportunity to see any cows that aren't bulling. Basically, the tail paint will still be on the rump. So basically, if you look through the herd at the end of the month again, you'll see any cows that still have tail paint on them. They'll be the ones that haven't cycled in the last 3 weeks or 4 weeks since you put on the tail paint.
Yeah, because Claire, I suppose we're trying to increase the 6 week calving rate on our farms all the time. And if we know this in advance of the breeding season, we can kind of tackle this. And, you know, if they need to get a vet out, that can be done well in advance.
Exactly, yeah. So I suppose it just gives a chance that you can make a difference rather than leave it until the middle of May and asking yourself, why hasn't this cow come bulling? She's calved a good bit. I suppose it just gives you a chance to maybe pick them out before any problems start arising.
Yeah, and I mentioned there that the conditions are difficult on farm at the moment for people up and down the county, Claire. You know, trying to get animals out to grass is proving quite tough. But, you know, I read in one of the farming papers during the week that, you know, some farmers are tempted to put back the breeding season a little bit to account for this. You know, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, look, sure, I suppose it's up to every farmer individually to assess their own situation. You know, they'll know roughly when they are getting out to grass each year. I know each year can vary, but they'll have an average when they're getting cows out. So I suppose maybe if you're consistently getting caught, you know, with cows peaking on silage indoors after calving, maybe early February and stuff, maybe you should be asking yourself, should I push it back maybe a week or 10 days or even more if you think it'd be more benefit to get cows out on grass? You know, the cows would be out on grass when they are actually hitting peak milk. So I suppose just on that, like, cows are indoors now at the moment and solids are a bit low, I suppose, because they are on silage. And I suppose the cows that are getting out for a few hours would have the higher solids as well, maybe in the fat and protein. Maybe just to follow on a small bit from what Niall mentioned last week about getting cows out. I just yourself, there hasn't, unfortunately, there hasn't been much improvement in the weather. So, and I suppose any grass covers that have been grazed out there are slow coming back, and the amount of fertiliser out is a bit low as well. But look, I suppose, just to put it out there, that I suppose if anybody is having any difficulty with the spring, to make contact with the local Chagas advisor or their local Chagas office, whether they're a client or not, just to come in and go through maybe if they want to look at their silage stores that are there, or work out, I suppose, how much silage they have and how they could look at stretching this out if they're not able to get cows out. As well, I suppose, look, if they wanted to formulate rations or anything like that to try and stretch the silage a bit more, we can come in. They can come in and do that with us. There'll be no problem. Also, I suppose to mention that Chagas have put out an advice sheet at the moment on I suppose managing grass and herd nutrition. So I suppose and dealing with the current weather conditions that are out there. So this is available online. So there's one for the dry stock guys and there's also one for the dairy guys. So look, I suppose the sheets that are there, they go through, I suppose, how work out your silage stocks and what options are available to you, as well as, I suppose, looking at the diets that the cows are on, and as well as the dry cows and the yearling heifers. So I suppose just for farmers who might be looking to get that information sheet, if they Google Chagas, and it'll bring you to the Chagas page. And at the top of that, there's a publications link. They can click on that link and there's basically two articles there. So the one for the beef farmers is called Coping with a Slow Spring for basically the beef farmers, and there's advice in that. And then the one for dairy farmers is called Managing Grass Covers and Herd Nutrition in the Current Weather Conditions. So it'd be, I suppose, useful for fellas maybe just to have a read of those and see what options are there, or otherwise look, just make contact with us here in the office
okay.
or your local advisor.
Yeah, and we can tweet out the links to that on our AgriTime's Twitter, which is, of course, at AgriTimeRK as well. Claire, just returning briefly to breeding and, I suppose, picking sires and having a look at bulls at this time as well. No harm to cast your eye over what's available.
I suppose you need to look at what your own herd EBI is at the moment, maybe, and I suppose think of what your own herd is performing, I suppose, by looking at the co-op performance report and see what you'd like to improve, maybe for your own herd. So I suppose whatever cows you breed this year, they'll calve down heifers next year, and those heifers should hopefully be calving into your own herd in 2 years' time. So I suppose it's a case of looking at what you want to improve and selecting for that. I suppose roughly, I suppose Chagas have a bull selection target, so I suppose just to maybe pick out a few of the key ones, I suppose they'd be looking for bulls that have an EBI of greater than 200 euros, so, and then you'd be looking for the team average to be around 270 euros. Looking at milk and fertility, so you'd be looking at bulls that would have a greater than 50 euros on milk and greater than 80 euros on fertility. Again, the team average for milk, you'd be looking for 80 euros, and the team average for fertility, you'd be looking for 120 euros. And just maybe to touch on the bull teams as well, because I suppose the recommendation has changed for this year. Previously, we were saying to use 5 bulls per herd, but this has changed. I suppose basically the reason for the change is that a lot of the bulls in the, we'll say the AI companies, some of them are related, and the top performing bulls can be related as well. So I suppose to counteract that and to increase the reliability of the bull team, I suppose we've increased the number of bulls that are recommended to be used on the herd. So we'll say a herd that is from, we'll say, 0 to 100 cows, the minimum bull team recommended is 7 bulls. So that's basically to increase the reliability as well there. I suppose just looking at any herds above that then is basically increasing. So I suppose if you were a herd that had 100 cows, 150, you're talking 8 bulls. And then upwards again, 150 to 200 cow herd, you're talking 10 bulls. So basically, look, that is to just, I suppose, counteract the fact that bulls are related and to increase the reliability of your team out there. And then I suppose picking bulls for replacement heifers, you also want to be picking the easy calving sires. So I suppose we generally recommend direct calving difficulty of less than 2% at the moment. And I suppose having a reliability of above 91% to 92%, I suppose, as high reliability as you possibly can. Just, I suppose, to make people aware as well that Chagas have a list of easy calving sires, which AI companies have given to us.
Mm-hmm. And finally, I suppose, Claire, as well, look, if there's a stock bull on the yard as well, maybe to have a look at him, that everything is working as it should be.
Absolutely. You need to make your plan for yourself, for your own herd. I suppose, what's the breeding season going to be? How long is it going to be? How long are you going to AI for? Or are you going to go with a stock bull? And like that, like you said, is the stock bull fit for it? So I suppose, look, it has been a long winter. Has the bull been up on slats for the whole winter? You know, if he has been up on concrete for the whole winter, his legs are probably going to be fairly tender at this stage. So I suppose you'd be looking at maybe trying to get that bull onto a straw bed at least. And then if you can't get him, I suppose, onto a straw bed if you can't get him out to grass. But ideally, if you could get him out to a paddock somewhere where he's out and he's moving and he's walking around, so at least he'll be fairly fit by the time you actually need him to go out after the cows.
Some great advice there, Claire. Thanks very much. And as I said, we'll tweet out the links to those advice sheets as well on coping with the conditions that are out there at the moment. But for now, Claire McCullough from Chagaskin Listowel, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks very much, Ashling.
And that's it from this week's AgriTime. Thanks to Abigail Bernard on sound, to all of my guests, and of course to you for listening and getting in touch. You can listen back to this AgriTime and other shows on the podcast section of the Radio Kerry website. Of course, that's radiokerry.ie. Dermot Moriarty is up next with Sounds Country. I'm back with you next Thursday from 7, but for now, from me, Aisling O'Brien, it's goodbye and take care.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from Radio Kerry. For more, go to radiokerry.ie/podcasts or search iTunes using the keyword Radio Kerry.